In this week's COVID Race and Democracy, we follow the struggle for workers and human rights at Amazon.
I think people need to wake up and recognize that this is a fight against slavery. And these companies don't give a crap what color we are anymore. They will make us all slaves.
We hear from workers whose labor under slave-like conditions is making Amazon billions in profits.
Morgan and Lewis, they are union buses. We need to all say, no union busting!
And we hear from organizers who are trying to unionize the workers and the voices of workers who are speaking out in support of the union.
And what he says may not be things we like to hear, but it is absolutely essential that he be given the right to live to say it.
And award-winning journalist and revolutionary Mumia Abu-Jamal is still in prison with COVID as well as other serious illnesses that threaten his life. Mumia is an innocent man. He deserves immediate, compassionate release. From Pacifica Radio, this is COVID, Race, and Democracy, a collective effort by producers from the Pacifica Network and radio affiliates focused on COVID-19 and the many ways in which this pandemic touches people's lives. I'm Johanna Fernandez of WBAI. Mumia Abu-Jamal is recovering from COVID-19 and is back in general population after completing quarantine in the prison infirmary. Mumia's emergency transfer to a hospital outside the prison on Saturday, February 27th, came less than 24 hours after supporters flooded the prison and the Philadelphia DA's office with emails and calls expressing concern about the health of the veteran Black Panther. His movement-appointed doctor, Ricardo Alvarez, is quoted saying, "The only acceptable treatment is Mumia's freedom." Mumia supporters are calling for the freedom of all political prisoners and all prisoners over the age of 50 and those with pre-existing conditions.
We have the pleasure of speaking today to Dr. Ricardo Alvarez, Mumia Abu-Jamal's medical consultant. Can you tell us about your work and how you come to the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, the imprisoned radio journalist and veteran Black Panther?
Yes, I work at a neighborhood health center here in San Francisco, and it's part of the community health center movement, which had its origins in the 60s to bring healthcare out into the community. And in my training as an undergraduate, I studied medical sociology, and I see care of political prisoners and an acknowledgement of the reality of the need of providing care to people who are in prison as an extension of our community. Since so many people in our community have loved ones in prison, and there's such a reality of mass incarceration impacting our communities.
What can you tell us about the problem of race, health, and imprisonment in the United States?
There is a phenomenon that's appreciated in those who do incarceration medicine, and that's called accelerated aging. So that if you have someone who's, let's say, 50 years old, their body physiologically is the body of someone who's closer to 60 or 65. Hmm. Now, that's important because when we examine what the prognosis is and implications are, it makes sense, of course, but it's important that it's documented, this phenomenon of accelerated aging. The severe conditions of incarceration, this inhumane conditions of stresses, of overcrowding, of solitary confinement, the lack of compassionate care of people under these conditions, and the levels of violence and psychological stresses accelerates the aging. It's so well documented now what the impacts of stress are in the body. It just makes sense that those who are incarcerated would die earlier.
Mumia was hospitalized on February 27th of this year. Can you tell us from the perspective of a doctor what precipitated his hospitalization and what's happening with him medically now?
First, let me say that Mumia had had previous COVID tests that were negative. COVID tests are not 100%. And in fact, he had had a recent COVID test, and on transfer, the final test that he got came back positive. Now, that's not uncommon, because if you look at COVID testing, you'll find that it may take a couple of tests before you finally get a positive test. And in this case, the most important thing to say is that he had been developing over some months some problems around his breathing and had felt pressure in his chest. And I just want to acknowledge that I think you played a key role and Pam played a key role as being eyes and ears to his health condition and advancing the urgency of him seeking care.
And you're referring to Pam Africa.
That's correct. Thank you for that clarification. Pam Africa has been one of the leading supporters of Mumia Abu-Jamal now over all these 40 years, really. I had previously shared with you why people may hesitate receiving care. And I think also one of the challenges that's occurring within the prison system is that there may be a protocol where they have to wait to get an appointment. And I think with your advocacy of inviting the urgency, it became more evident that that breathing problem was also accompanied by a large amount of swelling, and that prompted the suspicion around an underlying heart condition and then a transfer to the local hospital. And it was in that transfer that they had repeated the testing for the COVID. They determined he was COVID positive, and where they had to then pull off over 25 pounds of fluid from his body in order to bring his body back into balance.
So can you give us a sense of what a body of a prisoner who has aged prematurely, as you suggested, because of all of the stresses of imprisonment, what this situation feels like in the body? He was diagnosed with COVID, congestive heart failure, approximately 25 pounds of fluid were removed from him, and he was restrained in the hospital for 4 days while he was being cared for under emergency conditions.
Right.
What does that look like and feel like
right.
for a human body?
Well, Johanna, your eloquent summary speaks for itself, because there's a certain point as a medical provider, as a physician, I just step back and say, anyone imagines that. I can't speak to what that would feel like for me to be shackled, knowing that I want to scratch my body, for me to be shackled while all of this fluid is being, the word we use is diuresed, pulled off of the body. I can't even begin to imagine. That becomes the limits of my capacity to speak to it, because for me, those are barbaric conditions of hospitalization. And this is the standard protocol. I know that we're trying to work with the UN now to address two primary issues, again relating to Mumia's condition, but the larger health issues. And one is the shackling, which is standard protocol. But also, Johanna, what we're starting to appreciate are the reports of COVID in a setting of mass incarceration. And there's some reports of patients who are COVID positive being left in gymnasiums in large numbers with few bathroom facilities in order to create the kind of isolation and separation that's needed, that the conditions of the mass incarceration and the crowding are not allowing for effective treatment of COVID. And the simple treatment is a public health measure, which is to release our elders in COVID prisons. There's good data to show that the risk to the public safety is so greatly reduced when we release our elders in prisons.
I'd like to remind our listening audience that Jacob Blake was shackled to a hospital bed after police shot him in Kenosha, Wisconsin, and paralyzed him from the waist down. This happened in August 2020. And police finally unshackled him after protesters exposed the gross injustice. What is clear and loud are the echoes of slavery in this horrific scene. A patient, when they're most vulnerable, being restrained with shackles to their bed by the state. Can you talk to us before we conclude our conversation about what doctors are doing and what are you doing alongside others to address the crisis of COVID in the prisons, but more generally the crisis of public health in the prisons?
What we're not seeing is on an institutional level, the larger medical societies coming together and making a call for the release of our elders in COVID prisons. And we have to call them what they are. They're COVID prisons. And Mumia's case now is prompting us to come together and create a call to action, which includes a call to reach out to the governor in Pennsylvania, Governor Wolf, and ask for the release of our elders in COVID prisons.
Dr. Ricardo Alvarez, thank you so very much for your work and service in this struggle for justice.
Thank you, Johanna, for the amazing work you're doing in helping save the life of this beautiful spirit, this loving, beautiful spirit. And in some measures, I think that he is really the voice of the voiceless. And we speak of him as a public intellectual. And in some ways, he's a prophet in terms of giving us insight into where our nation is going. And what he says may not be things we like to hear, but it is absolutely essential that he be given the right to live. To say it. Bus to Philadelphia, heed the call, free them all, and leave a thought for Mumia or Boo Jamal, y'all. You can lock me down, but I will never be your prisoner. Victims are the ones that just obey and just give it up. Even in this world, we enslaved like some prisoners. A freedom fighter fights to the world, listen up, y'all. You can lock me down, but I will never be your prisoner. Victims are the ones that just obey and just give it up. Even in this world, we enslaved like some prisoners. A freedom fighter fights to the world, listen up. Yep.
Let us become that which we revere and remember. Let us be abolitionists, strengthened by the positive contribution of our ancestors, black and white. Let us struggle to make progress. Let us build the movement by making it blacker, more Latino, and more working class. Let us understand that social movements change history.
In the midst of the COVID pandemic, frontline workers in the United States and their families have faced devastating conditions. Meanwhile, Amazon has benefited from the pandemic through the expansion of its cloud service, its warehouses, and global distribution system, making Amazon one of the largest companies in the world. In the last year alone, the company has seen a profit increase of 84% and a total revenue of $386 billion. The owner of Amazon, Jeff Bezos, has also massively profited from the pandemic. He's now worth more than $182 billion. And Bezos is spending some of that money, in the millions, trying to stop the 6,000 workers at Amazon's warehouse in Bessemer, Alabama, from unionizing. Amazon has also offered Bessemer workers $2,000 to quit, so they will be ineligible to vote for the union. Alita Alston, a former Amazon worker, spoke at a rally against the major union-busting law firm Morgan Lewis. Amazon hired Morgan Lewis to help it prevent unionization. The firm has raised $2.3 billion from companies around the world to stop workers from unionizing.
No justice!
No peace!
No justice!
No peace!
My son's name is Justice, and I'm proud of that. I am also proud that I used to be an Amazon worker here in San Francisco. but the racism exists still. For those of you who have Amazon every day delivered, it is important that you know that in Bessemer, Alabama, where my child was actually born, it is still not okay to consider the racism for the working class people. No justice!
No pay!
No justice! In Bessemer, with 75% of the people there black, the first Amazon union needs to be there. Working class mothers like me, black with children who work at Amazon so that everyone during COVID can have your food. It is time for you to allow this. Right now, we're in front of Morgan and Lewis. They are union buses. We need to all say no union busting.
No union busting.
No union busting.
No union busting.
Power to the people.
Power to the people.
Power to working class mothers.
Power to working class mothers.
And their families. And if you have delivered tonight Amazon, think of us. Come down to this place right here where this law firm is discriminating in a way that should have been dealt with 400 years ago because of slavery.
Yeah.
We are saying it is time that the first Amazon union appears in Bessemer, Alabama.
Yeah.
No more slaving black mothers to bring Amazon food to everyone's door. It is time that everyone makes the call to Morgan and Lewis here. Everyone call Amazon. If you pay to have your food delivered, you should be telling them you need to let those people have a union. Union, yes. Fighting back and against the lies. Union busting's got to go.
Hey, we going on strike. We going on strike.
For real.
We going on strike.
For real.
Till they get this right.
Come on.
The control over workers at Amazon is suffocating. This, according to former Amazon worker Adrienne Williams. She spoke to Pacifica's Steve Seltzer about what the conditions are and why workers are fed up.
When I started working at Amazon, the first thing that kind of hit me was that we were forced to do these stand-up meetings where you go and they kind of tell you what's going on with the day and what happened good and what happened bad and, you know, whatever, like a lot of companies do. But I've worked for other companies. And when you have those kind of meetings, you get paid for them. But Amazon, that's a 30-minute meeting every single day that you don't get paid for. And so right away, that bothered me. And I brought that up to my boss and he really didn't know what to say about it. You know, it sounds really small. If you're getting $20 an hour, okay, it's 10 bucks, but $10 a day, it's 5 days a week, that's $50. That adds up to be about $2,600 a year. Now, if Jeff Bezos is one of the richest people in the world, him and Elon Musk keep kind of going back and forth. Why does he need my $2,600? I would argue that me and my colleagues need that $2,600 way more. And that's just the start of it. Then I started realizing that, okay, so all safety violations are being ignored. Illness prevention, allowing drivers to just take a minute and let their car, their vans cool down when it's 108 degrees in Vacaville. You can't do that because that really could be the difference between you getting to keep your job and you being fired from your job because you're too slow. And I'm hearing horror stories from places like Arizona and other states that get really, really hot in the summertime. Texas is another place. They've literally just hollowed out the workers' comp system in Texas. So you have them hiring a lot of immigrants. They do this with the construction field as well in Texas, where they just hire people that have trouble fighting for themselves for one reason or another. And then they just ignore the health and safety. There's no one you can talk to because anytime you bring these issues up to Amazon, they say, oh, you're not an Amazon employee. You don't work for Amazon because technically we work for a delivery service provider and we're supposed to bring these issues up to him. that person has no control because Amazon is telling them, if your workers don't get it done, we will fire your workers. And guess what? If you can't make them get it done, we'll pull your contract.
Maybe you can talk about the systemic discrimination against women at Amazon.
I had colleagues who had BAs and master's degrees who were just completely boxed out of any kind of managerial positions at Amazon because they weren't young white males. And as you go up the ladder in the Amazon structure, it becomes whiter and more male. And so pretty much, if you want to work at Amazon and you're Black or Hispanic or an immigrant, you're going to be a warehouse worker or a driver. And that's it. I've been told that that Bessemer warehouse is majority female. I've been told that those women, many of are saying that they have faced the same type of pregnancy discrimination that we have found coast to coast. With Bessemer, I worry if they are, if they're not successful, I worry that intimidation and the union busting and the firing and all the things that go along with that are going to hit them hard. If they do win, I worry that Amazon's going to do them the same way that they do the European unions. A union in Germany, they've been stalling negotiations for 7 years. So they just refuse to talk to them. And then they reroute all of their stuff through Poland. So there you have workers that it's like it pits workers against each other now.
As you said, Jeff Bezos is a multi-billionaire, richest man in the world. It seems he can't get enough. And it seems that they're actually illegal retaliation going on.
I think people need to wake up. I think people need to wake up and recognize that this is a fight against slavery. And these companies don't give a crap what color we are anymore. They will make us all slaves. If they can make money off of our backs, that's what they'll do. It's what the gig economy has become. It's what Amazon is trying to do. There was an article that came out in Bloomberg News a couple of months ago that showed how when Amazon comes into an area, all of the other companies that are similar, their pay also begins to drop. Their wages also begin to drop. So all of these other places, your FedExes, your UPSs, your port workers, people that do similar work need to be helping Amazon workers and gig workers because it's only a matter of time before the big bosses in these union places say, oh, we can make a ton more money if we just adopt this model. And then when you get people to a point where they're so exhausted, they're so malnourished, they're so tired, they're so beat down, it's that much harder to fight. Why does human nature like to wait till the 12th hour to link arms and try and fight when we can see the train wreck down the track and say, let's do something now? That's what I hope people start seeing, that there's power in the unions that are here. It may only be 6%, but there's power there. And we have to support the ones that don't have power, because right now what I see is like a poor people's movement. And poor people only have so many resources. It's why Prop 22 was so easily pushed through, because you have all the money of these huge gig companies and only poor gig workers who are pushing. So they couldn't combat the PR machine that was coming through from Instacart and DoorDash and, you know, Grubhub and all these other places that had millions and millions and millions of dollars to put in commercials that just lied to consumers.
Kill a CEO, slap him up and shake him up, and then you know, let him off the float and bait him with the dough. You can do it funk or do the disco, yeah, disco. Find me ways to kill a CEO, slap him up and shake him up, and then you know, let him off the float and bait him with the dough. You can do it funk or do it disco, yeah, disco. I'm gonna testify that it was worth you waiting. I'm gonna turn debating how to get it percolate.
This is COVID, Race, and Democracy. I'm Johanna Fernandez. Jeff Bezos has said that workers do not need unions. We now go to the voices of workers.
If I had the opportunity to talk to Jeff Bezos face to face, I would really want to ask him, have he ever worked in a warehouse before? Have he sweated for 10 to 12 hours a day and not being able to go to the restroom when he needed to go?
They got cameras. They watching us all the time.
It's a lot of walking, it's a lot of fast pace, it's a lot of climbing upstairs. It's just a lot. for the human body.
It's tiring, it's consistent, it's fast speed, it's unsafe because you consistently working fast paced 10 hours, only two breaks.
They're getting treated like robots, and it's not fair because even robots break down sometimes. I have issues when ladies are talking about TOT time, time off task, when they have to go use the restroom. When they saying that the restroom could be on the other side of the building, that they have to take their walk so far and they're timing them. And when they run out of time, people are calling me emotional, like, Michael, I'm on last chance. They said it's extremely hot in there. They said they have had people to pass out because of the extreme hotness in there.
Who get docked it or get TOT time for going to the bathroom? Who get docked it for going to get water if you need water, if you have to leave off your station? Come on now.
I work on the line. I work in decant, and I actually open packages and store them in the bin, but it's a lot of standing all day. And my day-to-day there is working so many hours without having the breaks that we need. It's really strenuous on the body. So I've been to the doctor several times.
It's unsafe because you consistently working fast-paced 10 hours, only two breaks.
Amazon will change their schedule in the middle of the night while they're sleeping. They don't even know their schedule's been changed. They wake up thinking that they got an off day and they supposed to be at work at 7 o'clock in the morning.
We've been having confirmed cases every week. It's unsafe to me because we don't know who have it. We don't know who we've been around, who have it.
I have people with issues about COVID-19. They haven't received their COVID pay. They've been off for weeks. Some people are back to work and still haven't received COVID pay. Man, this is heartbreaking. A lot of people need their money. They don't have a way to pay their bills, and they're looking for a pay that's supposed to come to them but haven't received it yet. They're owned by the richest man in the world, so we know the issue cannot be that he doesn't have the money.
I feel like every employee, as well as myself, deserve more due to what we do.
Well, Amazon says that they're there for their employees. To us, they hear our voices, but they're not responding to our voices. So now with us bringing in the union, we feel better that we have somebody that will sit down and talk to him about the working conditions that we're having and the dignity and respect that we're looking for.
We need the union out of Amazon to make things better, fair. We need job security, better wages.
But a union represent you when you don't have the voice to represent yourself.
And this is Jeff Bezos' opinion about how he treats the workers.
In the issue of working conditions, I'm very proud of our working conditions, and we have very good communications with our employees. So we don't believe that we need a union to be an intermediary between us and our employees.
This is Amazon's union-busting training video sent to management on how to deal with workers who are interested in the union.
Welcome. We're excited to have you at this training, specifically designed to give you the tools that you need for success when it comes to labor organizing. We are not anti-union, but we are not neutral either. We will boldly defend our direct relationship with associates as best for the associate, the business, and our shareholders. We do not believe unions are in the best interest of our customers, our shareholders, or most importantly, our associates. Our business model is built upon speed, innovation, and customer obsession. Things that are generally not associated with unions. When we lose sight of those critical focus areas, we jeopardize everyone's job security. We don't badmouth unions in general, but we will speak openly with associates about unions, including any specific concerns about particular unions involved in organizing. And we share our preference for a direct working relationship frequently and boldly, even when no organizing activity has occurred.
You will learn about the warning signs most commonly associated with early union organizing, as well as other warning signs that could indicate associate disengagement, vulnerability to organizing, or early organizing activity. While employees have the right to organize, we have a right and responsibility to share our position that a direct working relationship is better for the customer, the company, and the associate. In order to be able to do that effectively, it is critical that we recognize the early warning signs of potential organizing and escalate concerns promptly.
If you see warning signs of potential organizing, notify your building HRM and GM site leader immediately. HRMs and GM site leaders should notify their assigned ER managers or ER principal immediately. The most obvious signs would include use of words associated with unions or union-led movements like living wage or steward, petitions or other concerted activity, such as an associate purporting to speak on behalf of his or her coworkers when raising concerns, union graffiti, union t-shirts, hats, jackets, or other clothing, union flyers, and union visitors in or near the parking lot. Some signs are less obvious than finding the actual union flyer, but they can still indicate associate disengagement, which is itself a warning sign for potential organizing. Examples include associates who normally aren't connected to each other suddenly hanging out together, associates who were close suddenly stop speaking to each other, groups of associates scatter when approached by management, increased associate negativity, anger, or confrontation, unusual complaints or change in passion or detail around complaints, unusual interest in policies, benefits, employee lists, or other company information, or any other associate behavior that is out of character. For example, an associate who normally leaves promptly begins hanging out in the break room for an hour after work each day. In order to recognize warning signs, it is critical that you know what an associate's normal behavior looks like. Often, it is the change in behavior that is the warning sign, more than the actual behavior itself.
This segment was produced by Steve Seltzer. Supermarket, when boss wasn't looking, rolled the dice on the carpet in the lunchroom, listening to Biggie and Nas, but not as much as Snoop, 40, Water, and Pac. Me, I rock the Walkman instead, writing rhymes in my head, often bored, I'd recite them out loud and memorize a song long before I write it down. In lunchroom freestyles is where I learned to clown, plantation style, yellow, brown, black, majority. Half the young cats either enlisted in the Army or the Navy or Marines, but I was having dreams and I ain't even halfway there yet. It seems that we never get paid what our labor is worth, that's why we often in a daze on the way to our work. And when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about. And now we never get paid what our labor is worth. It's why we often in a daze on the way to our work. And when we get there, we can't wait to be out. So let me tell you what it's about.
We now go to Burbank, California, where a campaign to tax Amazon has been underway. KPFK's Elliot Avila and his guests report.
My name is Michael Bray. I'm a Metro bus driver, a member of SMART Local 1565, and newly elected trustee, speaking in a personal capacity. And I'm also a member of Socialist Alternative.
My name is Constantine Anthony, he, him pronouns. I am a recently elected Burbank City Council member. During my race, I was endorsed by Socialist Alternative and DSA LA and DSA National. And I'm just trying to do my part to help the working people of this fine city.
Constantine, you ran on a policy of taxing big business in Burbank. What was the objective of that?
So we have a lot of big corporations here in Burbank. And I'll tell you, you go to most big cities and there's, you know, just a couple of big dogs at the top that run the show. And those companies do well in those cities because those cities are designed to uplift people and take care of people. If you fail to do those basic needs and basic services, you're going to get riots and you're going to get marches and protests. Civil unrest follows. So the way to combat that is to go to those big companies and say, all right, you have had such a good run for so many years. It's time for you to pay your fair share back to us. If you want the streets and you want the buses to run on time and you want the workers educated and you want, you know, safe sidewalks and neighborhoods, you got to pay because you're making money hand over fist from all the good stuff that comes from this community. It's time for you to pay it back.
Is there fertile ground for union organization right now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think more now than ever, people want stability. They want jobs they know that they can rely on. More and more people are being pushed into these kind of gig work sort of deals. And on the topic of Amazon opening a new distribution center in Burbank, all we've heard from Amazon over the past couple of years is how awful they treat their employees, that they're over-monitored, that they're not allowed to have bathroom breaks, that not just Amazon, but a lot of huge companies hire outside consultants to do these really invasive spying campaigns to make sure that they can keep track of workers who might want to unionize. And that just speaks to, you know, how that there is that desire out there. They have to spend all this money to put it down, you know.
These corporations are, they have the same playbook of every corporation for the last 100 years. Corner the market, buy the politicians, write their own laws, keep making profit. Use that profit, corner the market, buy politics. It's the same thing. They've been doing it for decades. And we know their game. And the labor movement is the only movement in this country that can fight them toe to toe. So we need to get everyone on board. We need to get, you know, the social justice movement. We need to get people, the movement for Black Lives, the environmental coalitions involved with the labor movement to get all of us into this fight so that we can finally take on these giant corporations. That's the only way it was done. That's how it was done in the 20s and 30s. That's how it was done in the 1960s. I mean, I look back 50 years at Burbank, and it's so funny where they're building that Amazon plant. That used to be the Lockheed Martin construction yard, where it was the most union membership in the whole city of Burbank. It was a fully unionized plant. And now they're putting in the most non-union labor, a working class hating company in recent history. We've already got a Walmart in Burbank. So, you know, we're two for two now.
As we know, Amazon is very anti-union. What are there any steps, measures, or, you know, what can current workers do? And then I guess the catch 22 to that is, considering COVID, many of us have lost our jobs.
From the start of this pandemic, there was some really great examples of what we can do. In Detroit, at the very beginning last spring, the bus drivers there went on like a wildcat strike for a day because their company wasn't giving them appropriate PPE. They weren't having the good social distancing guidelines on the buses. So they shut down their workplace for a whole day until the employer was able to give them what they need. In New York, there's been massive cuts to the transit system over the past several years, I believe, with lots of layoffs of personnel and more layoffs planned. Cities and states are struggling with budgets all over the country, and that's going to affect not just transit, but social services in general. So I think looking at these examples of what workers have been able to do just kind of amongst themselves, unions, again, have a huge role they can play.
What we envision this to be is a working people's driven campaign. And we're hoping the rest of LA County sees what we're doing and, you know, takes it upon themselves to start to look at what they can do in their communities. Who is running roughshod over the working people in their neighborhoods? Who are the big businesses that need to start paying their fair share? So, you know, this could be a huge beacon for the rest of the county and hopefully the rest of the country. This is an international company. So what we do here affects Seattle, affects the East Coast, affects all of their warehouses and shipping facilities across the country. So that's really what we're hoping to do, is light a fire under some folks to get them started in their neighborhoods, to get them started working on their own campaigns. I just want to say to the listeners, stay organized, stay involved. There are ways of preventing the bad things from happening, and the playbook has already been written. Get involved, like Michael did, with your local union, with your local Black Lives Matter chapter. Get involved with anyone you know who is out there doing the work. You're not alone. You are not the only person who sees it this way. We are out there, and we are waiting for your help, and we need your assistance, and together we can do this.
What it comes down to is people who are, you know, listening to this program. If you believe that these are the kind of movements that we need to change society, and you want to see more people like Shama Sawant, more people like Constantine in elected office that don't take corporate money, you can organize with your coworkers, even if you're not in a union. You can join organizations like DSA, like Socialist Alternative. You can get involved in campaigns like Tax Amazon and Burbank.
What are your like social media outlets?
I'm all over social media. You can find me on Facebook, facebook.com/ConstantineAnthony, on Twitter and Instagram at Constantine in California. That's Constantine in CA. I'm all over the place. I have a YouTube channel. I got a TikTok. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible.
All right, Michael, I won't ask you for your TikTok, but thank you for being here.
That was KPFK's Elliot Avila, in conversation with union activist Michael Bray and Burbank City Council member Constantine Anthony.
There's power in the factory, power in the land, power in the hand of the worker. But it all amounts to nothing if together we don't stand.
The fight to organize the South is now critical to all working people in the United States. Many U.S. companies and other multinationals from around the world have moved to the South to avoid unionization. But now there is a growing strike wave that is linking up with the Black Lives Matter movement. Saladin Mohammed is a former organizer with the United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America, and now with the Southern Workers Assembly. He spoke last week at a panel about the significance of the movement.
I think it's important to point out about the passage of Right to Work as a section of the Taft-Hartley Act. It was not only anti-labor, it supported the racist states' rights movement to reinforce segregation in the workplace. If you read about Right to Work, you'll find out how that took place. I think with Amazon, we have to look at it in a larger context. We have to recognize the economic shifts in the U.S. and globally that's taken place over the last 30 years or so. Some of the core industries of the South, of the U.S. national economy and parts of the global economy have relocated in the South. The South is one of the regions with the highest amount of foreign direct investment. So we have to really look at it as a strategic region, not only to organize labor, but to position the working class in the larger struggle for a radical transformation. The Bessemer campaign, like the 1955 Montgomery bus boycott, can be an opening for labor in the Black Liberation Movement to build a more unified struggle in the South that was missing during the Civil Rights Movement. It's really important to recognize the leadership of Black workers. You know, too often, the organization and leadership of Black workers have been wrongly characterized as narrow or narrow nationalists and therefore divisive to the work class. Here's an example of the leadership of Black workers that is prompted a massive solidarity movement of workers and supporters of all nationalities. And it's also leading a struggle that can unite white workers inside of the Bessemer plant and to bring to the labor movement, to bring to that campaign some demands about the impact of the low wages, of the underdevelopment of our communities, et cetera, that Bessemer and other major industries have in the South. I think, you know, when we talk about Black Lives Matter, we have to see the Bessemer campaign as probably the first organized, conscious, and structural working class campaign since Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter was an important movement, but one of its weaknesses is that it didn't penetrate those sections of the working class that was in a position or in a position to challenge capital and to challenge government, which is absolutely necessary in the strategy for radical change. The SWA sees using the momentum created by the Bessemer campaign as an opportunity to begin developing infrastructure that seeks to build workplace organizations, committees, small in the beginning, and workers' assemblies that can unify workers from different workplaces, as well as progressive forces, the left, as we're speaking about, so that we're positioned We have to see that Bessemer is opening the floodgates for further organizing. However, there's got to be a lot of political work about this floodgate and about the potential that organizing the South has. The SWA will be organizing worker schools to involve workers, particularly in the South, that carried out solidarity actions in how to organize workers' assemblies and how to develop a plan to begin to help to build committees inside of the workplace. We have to build a movement. And this Bessemer campaign can't be measured solely by whether it wins the vote or not. It has prompted the beginnings of a movement. And we have to elevate that so that we're not disappointed if things don't go the way that we want. Even when they win, this Amazon is going to do everything it possibly can not to bargain in good faith, and everything they possibly can to put roadblocks in the way from the union and the workers winning a first contract. So this solidarity movement, it will be needed in order to support that struggle.
You turn around, dig a hole in the ground. Ho, Emma, ho. Ho, Emma, ho. You turn around, dig a hole in the ground. Ho, Emma, ho. Say, Emma, you from the country. Ho, Emma, ho. You turn around, dig a hole in the ground.
Retail, wholesale, and department store union organizers at the Amazon plant in Bessemer, Alabama, have fought hard to educate and mobilize the community. The following report about their organizing efforts is brought to us by Heartland Labor Forum on KKFI in Kansas City at 90.1 FM.
Hi, I'm Judy Ansel, the lead producer of the Heartland Labor Forum on Kansas City Community Radio, KKFI, 90.1 FM. We stream at kkfi.org. The following segment shows that the Amazon workers in Bessemer, Alabama aren't alone. A local coalition called the Bamazon Community Organizing Team is working the communities of Bessemer and Birmingham to win support. Our Heartland Labor Forum volunteer, Chris Mann, interviewed Eric Hall and Haley Zarsnick from the community organizing team and Mike Foster, a union organizer, about the crucial solidarity provided by the community.
What is the Bamazon organizing team?
Our team came together a little over a month ago to try and see what we could do as community organizations to support the union drive. And we have created a couple of different forums where we can bring people together and, you know, trying to prioritize us from the union. We have done done a couple of different things, from organizing canvassing, trying to organize getting messages of support from the community, and trying to make support in the community more visible. So that's a lot of the goals of our canvassing. And we think that last part's really important, because talking to people in the communities where workers live, we've been able to get signs up of support in people's yard. We've heard and collected people's stories about why they're pro-union, and we've just been able to make a lot of good happen. So it's been a great experience to be part of BCOP.
What organizations are part of the Bamazon organizing team?
As far as the community support arm, that consists of several local grassroots organizations, to include Our Revolution Birmingham chapter, the Democratic Socialists of America Birmingham chapter, SWEET, which is an energy company, also Greater Birmingham Ministries, Black Lives Matter Birmingham chapter. It's literally comprised of community organizers, people who live in the city limits or stay within the county limits, that really just want to see change take place. And we're really on the ground every day to create a better Alabama and make life better for our community members. We've been canvassing, we've been providing security measures, just being an extra set of eyes for the staff members who are on the grounds or at the gates, making sure that they're safe. We've been doing a lot, you know, as it relates to just providing that education component regarding why unions matter, why unions are important. We realize that a lot of younger generation really didn't understand the importance and the relevance of having unions. And so we have literally been going to barbershops, grocery stores, beauty shops, neighborhood corners, gas stations, everywhere where people frequent, and just having these important conversations of why unions matter. And we feel really comfortable. We feel good. And we're looking forward to having a union come March 30th.
Maybe Mike will weigh in on this, but why is that community support so important? Can't the unions just organize on their own?
Support is important in anything that you do. I mean, everybody got to have some support from somewhere. And I just think it's important as the RWDSU, when we're organizing, that we're showing our compassion and our solidarity is not just for the company, but for the community as well. We want to spread that unity, not just through the company, but through the community. So the community, and on the other hand, is showing their solidarity by standing with brothers and sisters and cousins and uncles that works in their facility, knowing that they need the support. I mean, that's just the love, the heart of this whole thing that we're trying to prove. And that's something that we're trying to put on blast, is support of one another to reach a goal that's going to benefit thousands of people and just allow the community to grow. Because I believe there's one thing that people don't know and don't understand is that Bessemer is one of the poorest cities in the state of Alabama. So that's why the community support is so important right now. Because this just don't affect the workers at Amazon. It affects the community.
When you guys are canvassing or interacting with the public about Amazon, what is the overall sentiment of the public when you go door to door or put signs in people's yards and things? Haley, could you comment on that?
Sure. I haven't done a lot of canvassing quite yet. I'm going out this weekend right before the caravan, and I'm excited about it. But I will say, just from conversations with people that I've been having as often as I can, I am really surprised by how wide the support is. I think that even people who have not been historically pro-union can see the ways in which Amazon is exploiting people and can understand maybe for the first time why someone would want to join a union. And, you know, it's taken a lot for a lot of these people to stand up and, like Big Mike said, to show some leadership. And so, yeah, I think it's been great.
I would just like to say a quick closing remark that I believe that no matter what the outcome is at Bessemer, Alabama, that the labor movement is alive and it's well and it's going to keep going, and it does not affect what the results is in Bessemer, Birmingham.
And so what you can do is support people on the ground, support the organizations that's on the ground doing the work, connect with the local chapters and the local organizations and the national organizations. And then two, also, we've just passed this PRO Act, but we need to go a step further. And when I say go a step further, we need to demand that these major corporations that's receiving millions of dollars in federal contracts, that they do not use those dollars, taxpayers' dollars, to invest in union busting.
We thank the Heartland Labor Forum and its production team at KKFI Community Radio in Kansas City for this report. This concludes today's edition of COVID, Race, and Democracy. We thank all of Pacifica's sister stations and its radio affiliates that contributed to the production of this show. Musical contributions were by Rebel Diaz, Boots Riley, Billy Bragg, Blue Scholars, G-Mac Cash, and the legendary Bessie Smith. Today's show was produced by Steve Seltzer and Johanna Fernandez. Sound design and editing by Polina Vasiliev. Our executive producers are Akua Holt, Polina Vasilyev, and Steve Seltzer. You can find this and all previous episodes at our website, covidtaskforce.pacifica.org. I'm Johanna Fernandez. Thanks for listening.